Okay, now we are going to not talk about the Buddha's time or 1,000 years later. We're going to talk about neither the past nor the future. This is timelessness. Vajrayogini is a Dakini, and what we're going to do is talk about her. I'm going to introduce her to you. Actually, she needs no introduction. She would be a lot better introducing me, maybe, but what can I say? Before I start, I do want to thank Sheila, who blew the picture up, of which I had only a small one, and we have this gorgeous picture of Vajrayogini. The other one, and we will use her picture, and you can look at her later, to see what she symbolizes. This is a wood cut print, which was done by the first woman, Ratnasuri, in our order, who ordained another woman. And she lives at Taraloka. She's now in her very late 80s. And she's a woman that I like very much. I had the privilege of living with her for 6 months. And she had her yidam and sadhana were Amitabha until a very few years ago, when she said as she was coming up to looking at her own dying dan more closely, she needed more strength. And Vajrayogini is often seen in connection with Amitabha. So we shall talk about her a bit. And first of all, there's not a whole lot to say. Because she's really an experience. And what we do is experience, and we don't talk about her. But having some picture of her symbol helps us, for us who need these symbols, to experience what she stands for. So the first thing that I would say is, she's a Dakini. So what's a Dakini? Because this is a part of Buddhist practice that we don't always see a whole lot of in our own particular devotional life within our Triratna Buddhist community, but we do some. And a Dakini is actually based in the practice of Tantric Buddhism, which is basically from Tibet. And her concern is with the Tantra is concerned with the direct experience of what one truly is in the depth of one's own being, and with direct experience of what we call reality, which we would call pratityasamutpada, or that which everything is dependent on everything else for cause and effect and for existence. Always changing. But she's concerned with what's truly in our depth, and with the direct, in our depth, we have that direct experience of reality. It's the essence of mind that Vadhuma was just talking with us about. The purpose is for her to help us to reach that. It's one way. There are more than one way to go about this in practice, and that is her practice. So Vajrayogini is known as the queen of the Dakinis, and is really kind of the major Dakini that we hear of or practice with within our own community. She represents the free-moving energies of the mind. She has quite a wild appearance. And sometimes can be hard for us to understand, because from our culture, we're not quite sure what to do with her. But remember, she's the free energies of our mind. So what can our minds do? There are kind of three ways that we normally might experience her, or that people do. And one is, she is as a full Buddha, and that she would be a female Buddha form. One way is that she is an embodiment of our own energies that are upsurging, and it's our passionate energy. It's that very passionate energy that we have. There's nothing quiet about Vajrayogini. And that energy includes our negative energy. And she speaks a lot to connect with our negative energy that we can turn into useful energy as we are moving along in our spiritual life and toward enlightenment. So we can change that into helpful energy. And she's also seen as a spiritual companion or a protector. When you see people, and the people that I know who feel connected to Vajrayogini are people who have a lot of that bubbly energy, a lot of very active energy in them, because she responds to that energy and they respond to her energy is a symbol. Vajrayogini means sometimes it's called skywalker, and that is because she's free. We talk about the sky. The sky is total openness. The sky is where there are no boundaries, and she walks freely. We use it as a metaphor for emptiness sometimes, that it's totally open, and that is she is free because she's fully enlightened. So she looks fierce and weird. And later you can come and look at the symbols a little bit closer, but we're going to talk about them just a bit here. It has a symbol is, it's symbols are like a picture or an idea or words that kind of like stand for something, but they don't really stand for something. What they are is the way we enter into an experience. So when we see the Buddha Rupa, we can enter into, we have the symbol of the Buddha and what he stands for, but we can enter into it, that experience, when we actually join with that symbol or sit like in meditation or in devotion, one of the purposes of our devotional lives. So, but we need, for most of us, most of the time, a visual experience or a visual symbol. I mean, or a word symbol, etc., are helpful to us to go about this. So at first we need it externalized, and then we can take that symbol in, and we can become one with it, and we can come through it. So that is why we have Vajrayogini and the pictures. But she's a symbol, really, of enlightenment in many ways. So when you look at her, first of all, you see, can you all see her? She is standing in...
Would you like me to hold it for you?
Yeah, well, I think I have to because I'm going to point some out.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
So her... She stands in a blazing fire of wisdom. So we have this blazing fire of wisdom that she's standing in. She's red. She's always red, bright red. And her bright red has a couple of meanings, but mostly it means passion and it means compassion. So she blazes red with passion, and her passion is dedicated to burning the fire of, to burn off with the fire all of our hindrances. So she can burn off the fire of our hindrances, which are all of our poisons and obscurations, that which covers or hides or we get lost behind for our the essence of our mind, the purity in our minds. She's also, as I had said, you know, Amitabha is one of the five Jina Buddhas, if you're familiar with that, and he's red, and his symbolism is compassion. Red in Tibet is compassion. She's naked. She's always naked. And maybe she couldn't afford clothes. No. But her nakedness is actually transparent. She's transparent and she's free. So no clothes. It's just a picture of no clothes. She's transparent and she's free. She has loose hair hanging down her back. Some of her pictures that you see are actually look even more fierce, much more fierce than this one. The loose hair is symbolic of her freedom, the freedom of full awakening. So it flows and it's as she's moving about freely in the sky or the cosmos or whatever. You'll see when you look at her, she has a third eye. She has her two eyes and a third eye. There are several figures, actually, that have a third eye. But the third eye is seen more like a spiritual eye. And so we give it a physical appearance, but it's really not meant as an eye like this eye of mine that isn't a spiritual eye. Well, it has a spiritual eye. Pieces. No, we hope. But she sees the past, the present, and the future. There is no time. And she sees it that way. And she sees that there's nothing pure and nothing impure. And if you remember when we're reciting the Heart Sutra, when we chant it, it's not pure and it is not impure. She has this fantastic necklace, which is 50 skulls. And that's why we need to know a little bit about what this means, because we might think that's talking about death, 50 skulls. But it's not. It actually represents, the 50 skulls usually represent 50 consonant and vowels in the Sanskrit language, and that is with there and stands for wisdom. So her 50 skulls actually stand for wisdom. She has in her right hand here a chopper. And I've also seen it written as a flaying knife. If you know what that is, you know, you flay and you flay the flesh off of animals and fish and so on. A flaying knife. And it has a handle that's a vajra. And if you're not familiar with what a vajra is, I didn't bring one, but it has the two sides, and you'll see them on our shrine many a time or in pictures. It's the five jina Buddhas, and it's connected, and it's actually the wisdom and the compassion of the five of the Buddhas. So it has the knife, and what this is for is cutting through the wisdom. And it's a vajra is considered like a diamond, and it's very strong, and it can cut through. So it cuts through the fabric, of ignorance toward wisdom. It doesn't cut through to wisdom. I always think of it because it cuts through that fabric of ignorance so that we can experience wisdom. And in her left hand, she has a skull. And it's called a skull cup, and it's filled with blood. And she's about to drink it. And that can be a little interesting in our culture. But here it doesn't mean what we would think. It really is that where she drinks the blood, it's the negative karma that she's transforming to the nectar of compassion. So it's our negative karma that she's transforming into the nectar of compassion. You'll see that she's standing on two beings down here, squishing them. And she's stamping them out is what she's doing. Those are two worldly deities, and there are names for them, and I'm not going to go into that at this point. But they signify hatred and attachment. And she has overcome the hatred and attachment. It also signifies, for many people, wisdom and compassion, because she's come over the hatred and the attachment, and it's wisdom and compassion. Compassion is sometimes called method toward wisdom. So that's what she's stamping out and signifying. She's stamping out the hatred and the attachment and signifies wisdom and compassion. Her dancing pose is that she's a shape shifter. Her shape is shifting all the time. And she's ready to take on any form that is necessary to bring people to enlightenment. That means us. She's willing to take on any form. She's wrathful. Her wrathfulness is to not to allow us to retreat on our commitment to enlightenment. So you cannot stop. And if you make a commitment to Vajra Yogini, it is said you had better not fail with it. Because she is wrathful and she says, keep going. She really is seen as a very serious protector and a very serious aid in the symbolism of our path to enlightenment. Many people see her as a protector, and that she protects us by stamping out the hatred and attachment and purifying our karma. There are other ways, if you become interested in Vajra Yogini, any being that we have, any symbol, has more than one meaning to different people. If you sat with her a long time, some of these things would take on a different shade of meaning for us. That's the nature of having the symbol. So you certainly can come up and see this and look also at the woodcut. That is actually very beautiful. I had that in my home for quite a long time and then gave it away because somebody else really is attached with more to Vajra Yogini. What I'm going to do, instead of talking about her anymore, is read a poem that is really a devotional poem to Vajra Yogini. And this is, in her form, as called a trauma goddess. That's one of the ways that people speak of her, as a protector and as somebody who helps us with the difficulties of our obscurations and our greed and our hatred and our delusion and the things that happen to us in our lives that we enhance with our attitudes and views and mind, and to help us to purify those. I'm the Diamond Maiden, the player of games. Yogini is one of my forms, showing that I'm beyond earthly attachment. I am the shining revelation to the ascetic, the women in silk and roses. I'm the harlot in black net and leather, who gives enjoyable punishment. I'm the glass bead master, creating universes of form, and a spark of me is in each bead, for I dwell in karma. I'm the trauma goddess, the lady of pain. In return for devotion, I pull thorns from the heart. In return for obedience, I untie the knots in the belly and the head. I hold the Vajra, which gives and receives. I reshape family karma. The trauma goddess is called for people in painful situations where anger and hatred block the path of the soul. I evaluate the benefits of revenge and give better suggestions for spiritual growth. I am not suited to polite society, to social striving, upward mobility, and making good impressions. I'm radically honest, sensitive, brilliant, and blunt. I hold up a mirror to the best and worst facets of human life. The lady of trauma is the mirror of pain. I reflect the disastrous ways that human beings interact. Then the reflections are stretched and distorted with irony and humor and sadness, loosening their grip on the heart so that the person who seeks freedom can get a taste of being free. My devotees pray, Lady of Trauma, Lady of Pain, Skedic and Bhairavi and Sannyasini and Mistress, pull me from the disaster I have made of my life. Save me from the evil machinations of others. This is their prayer, and I hear it in their hearts as they chant my mantra. Savior Lady, Mother Goddess, Bodhisattva, love me as I love you. I am desperate and bound. Free me by your grace. I will give freedom, but not without realization. Those who have been bound bind others. Those who have suffered cause suffering. I let them know how they've been affected, but also how they have affected others. I don't wear bones because of death. I wear them because they represent what is beneath the surface. The blood that I drink is the evil karma of those I save, and the karma is then halted and does not pass to others. I appear wrathful as I take on anger, hatred, fury, and the desire to destroy which are destroyed within me. I'm a dancer upon the pain of all mankind. I destroy the dark and corrupt. My compassionate side is hidden, but for those whom I love, who have taken on my dark grace, I open a path of shining light with pain and sorrow left behind.